Welcome to Crime Beat on the Artists First World Radio Network. Crime Beat, discussing the issues and controversies of the criminal world with famous personalities. Your hosts, Ron Chepsik and Will Hareb, will guide you into the deep underbelly of the criminal mind. To learn more about your hosts, their books, and past shows, visit the Crime Beat archive page. And now, your hosts, Ron and Will.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Will Hareb, your co-host and producer of Crime Beat. This hour-long broadcast puts you, the listener, into the back alleys and boardrooms of the world's most fascinating subject, crime. Our guests will allow you to experience their lives, and this is exactly where you want to be on Thursday night. And it's right here on Crime Beat, brought to you by the Artists First World Radio Network. Tonight, we're broadcasting live from our studios in Thunder Bay, Canada, and Rock Hill, South Carolina. At this time, I'd like to introduce our listeners to my co-host and moderator and executive producer, the indefatigable Mr. Ronnie Chepsik. You know, Ron is an award-winning author based in South Carolina. He's the author of 29 books, including Sergeant Smack, The Lives and Times of Ike Atkinson, Kingpin, and His Band of Brothers, and the just-published Straight from the Hood, Amazing but True Gangster Tales. He's also the producer of two award-winning documentaries. Get out there and buy these books, and be sure to check out his documentary DVDs. You won't be disappointed, that's for sure. Ron is also a consultant to the History Channel's Gangland documentary series and publisher of Strategic Media Books. You can go to www.strategicmediabooks.com. Be sure to visit his website at www.ronchepsik.com. You can also join him on Facebook and Twitter. Now, here's Ronnie.
Thank you, Willie. And here's a little bio on my co-host, Willie Hareb. Willie is a freelance writer and broadcast journalist from Thunder Bay, Canada, who has assisted me on some of my crime books. Willie is currently involved in the international shipping business, where he's a contributing writer to several trade publications. This year, he'll be publishing two books, Movers and Mavericks, an anthology about influential people from the Thunder Bay area, and another book about the famous Ganelda shipwreck that sank 100 years ago in Rossport on Lake Superior. Willie?
Well, thanks for that promo, Ronnie. Very nice, always appreciated. Well, I'll tell you something. We're in for a dynamite and intriguing broadcast tonight. We have as our featured guest, Mr. Henry Hill. You know, at the age of 12, his ambition was to become a gangster. Henry Hill was portrayed by actor Ray Liotta in one of the best gangster movies ever produced, Goodfellas. Henry Hill was quoted as saying, "To be a wise guy was better than being President of the United States. Be a wise guy was to own the world." In Nicholas Pileggi's remarkable bestseller titled Wise Guy, published 25 years ago, he describes the most intimate account ever printed of life inside the deadly high-stakes world of the mafia. Wise Guy is Henry Hill's story in a fascinating, brutal detail. Nicholas Pileggi reveals in visceral detail the day-to-day life of a working mobster. It's going to be a great show, so stay tuned. You won't want to miss this one. Well, Ronnie, just before we reach into our mailbag and read some mail, you know, we've had this is our 36th show, I believe, buddy. You know, there's no turning back the clock, and, you know, we're thrilled and delighted to announce we've had overwhelming positive comments.
Right.
Thumbs up about our program.
Right, and we just get better. Tonight we got Henry Hill, legendary ex-gangster, talking about what he's been doing since those days. And, you know, our show just seems to be picking up steam, so we're really, really, really happy about that.
That's for sure. It's really something to cheer and wave the flag about, buddy. You know, I'd like to thank also all the production people at Artists First World Radio Network, in particular Corey. He's done it for us all these shows. Thanks, Corey, and thanks for making the show possible. Like I said before, Ronnie, internet radio is the place to be, man. It's great to be recognized,
right.
And I guess it proves you're right on track. Now, here's this week's mailbag. Hey, Ronnie, this one is from Dylan Vaughn of California. He writes, "Hi, Willie. Love listening to your show. We'll be tuning in the future as well. Best wishes from Troy. Listening now." Hey, Ronnie, these guys were two musicians I met on the cruise ship Columbus when she was in the port of Thunder Bay last month. Anything to add to that?
Well, we're now on the high seas. I hope our show don't get hijacked. I couldn't resist that, Willie.
Well, you know, they're out in on the east coast of the United States now, and they're probably...
Right, you can't get away from us, right, whether you're on land or sea.
You bet. They're probably all listening to it right now
right. On
the ship. Anyway, moving on, Axel Hartman of New Jersey writes, Your show with Ron Kessler last week was certainly revealing. The FBI is an institution with a lot of history. I think the United States is a safer place to live in because of the painstaking undercover work they do. It's law enforcement at its finest. Anything to add to that, Ronnie?
Yes, it was really a revealing show. He had some really interesting secrets about Marilyn Monroe, you know, about J. Edgar Hoover. We talked about Hoover, and I was really interesting to learn that he was a pioneer in science and getting the FBI into science to do investigations. And, you know, he denied the existence of the mafia for years, which really helped the mafia. So I guess his legacy is a two-sided coin, right?
Absolutely. All you listeners out there who haven't listened to that broadcast, we invite you to listen to it on the archive. Well, Ronnie Boy, you want to give our listeners out there in the wide expanse of cyberspace a preview of next week's show, please?
Right. Next week we have Luis Diaz, who's going to give a command performance, a retired DEA agent who was one of their crack undercover DEA agents when he was working, and he helped to take down Nicky Barnes, the famous gangster. If you remember the movie, he was portrayed by Cuban Gooding in American Gangster.
Yeah.
And he's going to be talking about his life as an undercover agent. Very colorful individual very interesting. So it should be a great show.
Yeah.
And I remind people that we have two books out, one straight from the hood, Amazing with True Gangster Tales, another one about chili pimping in Atlantic City, the memoir of a small-time pimp and hustler. And both books are doing well, and they can go to our website, strategicmediabooks.com, for more information on that.
Well, good luck on that, Ronnie. I'm sure you're going to do really well on those, and best of luck on those. Always rooting for you.
Yeah.
Well, Ronnie, as you know, the beat to crime never stops. It never, never stops. Every week, just to get you in the mood, we present our rap sheet part of the program. Our rap sheet feature is a potpourri of news and events from the world of crime. Here is this week's rap sheet item number one. Dateline, Los Angeles, California, October the 7th. State law enforcement agencies target California's marijuana trade. Hey, Ronnie, federal prosecutors announced a crackdown last Friday on what they call California's massive commercial marijuana trade, including medical pot dispensaries they say are often fronts of illegal for-profit drug distribution. They outline a range of actions, including civil forfeiture, lawsuits against property owners involved in drug trafficking. Hey, Ronnie, I thought the new governor, old hippie Jerry Brown, was an advocate of reduced marijuana penalties.
Yeah, but he can't do anything about it because the federal government wants to crack down. Federal law trumps state law. And that's what's really irritating a lot of marijuana reform advocates that are trying to get the policy changed. They say that Obama went back on his promise by launching this crackdown on medical marijuana dispensaries in California.
Yeah.
And it's really amazing. It's a sort of a shock and awe campaign. And targeted shops have been warned to shut down within 45 days or face criminal confiscation of their property. If they're operating legally under the state's 15-year medical marijuana law. And the government's arguing that these dispensaries have become havens for international drug traffickers, but I think the objective is to crack down on medical marijuana. And it's part of the prohibitionist policy that's been in place since 1932, and as part of the failed drug policy that has been in operation. You know, it's a $20 billion industry. You know, marijuana cultivation, and it's all illegal. That goes in the hands of gangsters, you know, and drug traffickers. That money could be used for good. And half the prison population are marijuana-related offenses, which is ridiculous.
Absolutely. Hey, Ronnie, on the subject of war on drugs, what do you think about that wild, bizarre story last week? Don't you think the Mexican Drug Cartel Association is a bit upset with that?
You're talking about the alleged...
Kill the Saudi ambassador to the United States?
Yeah, yeah. You know, first thing I thought of Iraq and weapons of mass destruction, you know, and everybody's jumping on the bandwagon, but no one's really investigated the evidence yet, so let's wait and see, because it's so bizarre that we got to feel confident that we're not going to have any problems with terrorists because they're so incompetent. This is one of the most bizarre stories I've ever heard.
Yeah,
and I have reservations about the Mexican cartels getting involved with that for paltry pocket change for them. I think it was $1.2 million. That's all they're going to get to be part of this hit on the Saudi ambassador. So
yeah.
we'll wait and see. You know, it could be true, but we'll wait and see. But
well,
everybody's
know,
jumping on the bandwagon, you know, the
yeah.
media.
Yeah, when FBI Director Mueller came on TV, you know, his body language was a bit peculiar when he was announcing this so-called plot. Now, we got to keep an eye on this.
Right, story. Right.
Now, just before we get on with our very special guest, Mr. Henry Hill, the legendary former mobster, who was played by actor Ray Liotta in that classic 1990 movie Goodfellas, will take a brief station identification. This is Crime Beat on the Artist First World Radio Network. Wherever you are tonight, we hope you enjoy our show this evening. Your hosts are Ron Chepsik and yours truly, Will Harib. You can listen to our broadcast weekly on this internet band on Thursdays from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you have any questions for our guests, email us at crimebeat123@yahoo.com. We'll be glad to hear from you, and we'll try to incorporate ideas into our future programs. Well, Ronnie Boy, tonight's show features the infamous Henry Hill. You know, this marks the 25th anniversary of Wise Guy, Nicholas Pileggi's true crime masterpiece, and a book that has been described as the best book on organized crime ever written. Wise Guy chronicles the life of legendary former gangster Henry Hill, the working-class Brooklyn kid who grew up to live the highs and lows of the gangster life. Mr. Hill's story became the basis of Martin Scorsese's film masterpiece Goodfellas. It's going to be a great show, so stick around. You won't want to miss this one. Take it away, Ronnie.
Thank you, Willie, and welcome to the show, Henry Hill.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Okay, thank you. This is the 25th anniversary of the what's been described as the best crime book about organized crime ever written, and I agree. It helped me get interested in writing true crime. And are you doing anything special for this anniversary?
Well, I might have a drink with Nick, but he's a great guy. I mean, he did an unbelievable job. You know, I mean, the book was number one for 16 weeks on New York Times bestseller list. I mean, Nick was just an unbelievable mentor of mine and just a great guy. And matter of fact, we have a television series. It's in the hopper right now with AMC.
Oh, great. What's that about, Henry?
The Young Henry Hill. That's the working title. I have no idea. You know, that right now... the pilot is just being written. The showrunner that did Oz is our showrunner.
Right.
And you know, it's a signed deal. So we're just waiting to see.
Right. You've got so many things going. We need three shows to talk about all the things, and we'll talk about some as we go along. But one of the things that I was really shocked by is that I don't know if this is true, but you have to verify, you got a $500,000 advance for that book, and the IRS took it all away. Is that true?
No. I got $175,000 for the book.
$170,000, but did the IRS take your money away?
Wait, no. I changed the law. I went to the Supreme Court, and we fought that all the way up to the United States Supreme Court,
wow.
And we won.
Oh, wow. And how long did it take you to do that?
Quite a few years.
Yeah, because it took you 6 years to write the book.
Well, because a lot of the characters in the book, we had to wait till their appeals were exhausted. So we had the Simon Schuster gave us the grace, you know, of 6 years because we had to wait till everybody's appeals were denied.
Right. But your victory probably was a victory for a lot of. People that were ex-gangsters, right?
Oh, of course. Anybody that... you see, I never commit. I mean, what they were trying to say... it was the Son of Sam Act they were trying to pull on me. You know the Son of Sam law?
Right.
That you couldn't profit from crimes that you were...
That's right. There was a Son of Sam law at one time, right?
Exactly.
Right.
We had all the states had to redefine the Son of Sam law. If I beat them in the Supreme Court in Washington.
Right. Congratulations on that. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I
got my money, by the way.
Right, that's great. Like, well, got you started because, you know, you're out of the crime business and you needed money to get started in your new life. So that was good. But, you know, I was watching a movie today for about the 100th time. And, you know, at the end of the movie, your character laments that you become an average nobody and you're going to spend your rest of your life, you know, as a schnook. But your life never turned out that way, right? It turned out pretty good.
Well, you want to know something? Yeah. All I can say is that I'm blessed. And that's the only thing I can say. You know, I changed my life around. And that's one thing, you know, I try to get through to these kids. I do a lot of, mentoring with children.
Right.
Not with
right.
children, you know, with young gangsters.
Right.
And, or think they're gangsters, you know. And, you know, if you could change one kid out of 1,000, that kid, you know, you could change the world. That kid may find the cure for cancer.
Right.
You never know. And I've had kids come up to me and say that they changed their life after listening to me speak.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, it's amazing how, you know, how life makes it 360, which it did for me. And, you know, and I emphasize these kids that are cat for you. And you can get out of any gang situation, any mob situation that you're in. It can be done.
Right. Does that mean that you regret that life that you had at one time up until, you know, you got busted by the feds?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I would have listened to my parents, stayed in school and, you know, become an electrician like my dad was. You know, of course I would have.
Right. Well, I read you know, somewhere where you actually didn't learn to read or write until you were in prison. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. And I got a college degree in prison under the GI Bill. Yeah, I'm very dyslexic. Really dyslexic.
Oh, you're dyslexic.
Very, very so. Very
wow, much. Wow. So that creates a lot of problems in day-to-day living for you, right?
Was when I was a kid. They thought I was just a knucklehead.
Right.
Period.
Right. Did that affect? Was that one of the reasons why you dropped out of school? Is that you thought you were stupid when you had a dyslexic problem?
Of course, I couldn't, you know, read or write.
Right.
No,
right.
As a young man. So right. I got my GED in the Army. And then if I got out of the Army, when I went to prison, I wound up going to college in prison.
Right.
You know, and I got an Associate of Arts degree.
Right. Do you still miss any part of that life at all? Because it was an adrenaline rush, right?
Living, oh, absolutely.
Living, you know, you watched the movie, and it was like you were always have to be on your toes. You always, you know, you're always doing something, and it was on the edge of the law. So it must have, you know, been a real downer for you when you had to leave that life for a time, anyways, at least, right?
You know, between me, you, and a lamppost, I was so relieved. They were going to whack my wife. They were going to whack my, you know, after the offensive robbery. Jimmy killed 11 people, two of their wives. You know, I mean, it was...
Right. You're talking about Jimmy Burke, who was played by Robert De Niro in the movie. On that, then, do you think that, you know, death was the eventual outcome if you stayed in that life?
Oh, absolutely. I knew they were going to whack me. When I got popped by Nassau County for drugs, I knew I was going to get killed. Because Jimmy was my partner, Paulie was getting $5,000 a week from me. His son was a partner in the heroin business. We was dealing with guys from, matter of fact, from Canada. I'm trying to think of some big wheels up in Montreal. I can't think of the name.
Rizzuto's, you mean? You mean the Rizzuto clan?
Well, they were all hooked up.
Yeah.
You know, and I had met them in prison. You know, that's...
Right. Well, what's amazing is, Henry, is that I heard you on the Internet today, and you're the only survivor from the Lufthansa. You're the only guy living. So most of the people you knew from that life, you know, have gone, right?
Yeah, they all got whacked, every one of them, and two of their wives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all baloney, bullshit.
Right.
That, they take care of your family. They didn't take care of my family. If I wasn't, when I went in the Army, if I didn't go to college, you know, under the GI Bill, and I got $600 a month, mm-hmm. my family would have been out on the street on welfare.
Right. Yeah. So prison was really a blessing for you in a way. It gave you a lot of skills that helped you later in life. To
absolutely.
Escape,
I mean,
to escape that life.
You know, a blessing. You know, captivity is not a blessing.
Right. So you're actually, I guess in some ways, if you look at your life, you're charmed.
I'm blessed.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not a you're not overstatement when you say that, because you know you escaped that life with your life, and then you were in a federal witness protection program, which was no full of cherries, and you got out of that, and you've had, you know, you've had personal problems, but you survived that, and now you're an entrepreneur, like par excellence, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. But do you ever go back to the old neighborhood in Brooklyn?
Occasionally, I go back, and we do some filming back there for different shows I do.
Right. Do you ever see anybody that you know from that life?
Not from that life. I see some. There's two or three friends that I still have very close to me. Frank Luca, kids I grew up with.
Right. How do they react when they see you?
I mean, they're all very successful businessmen, all the kids I grew up with, and we enjoy our company.
Right. Well, what's amazing is that you're very. Your life is very open now. And at one time, you were in a federal witness protection program, obviously.
It was a $2 million hit on my life.
But now you're I guess, are you free of possible threat?
I've had stalkers, mostly women.
Yeah, you get a lot of groupies, right?
But, I mean, I had a woman who was going to kill me and then kill herself. We have her committed twice. Honest to God, I mean, you never know some kid, right?
Well, I should alert our listeners to your website, goodfellahenry.com. On the website, you got the thread of the week up there, which was really good. I couldn't believe some of those comments. I just got to read one. This guy called himself Pisshead and said you were a jazz-cat-loving little boy-raping gang midget, porn loving, and he goes on and on and on. Is that typical of the type of stuff you get, or is this serious stuff? These people, are they just trying to be funny?
Nah, it's probably some kid with pimples on his face living in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, or something. Who knows? My main website is goodmorninghenry@charter.net. That's the one that they could reach me on.
Okay, Good Morning Henry.
That's one of my websites. There's quite a few of them.
Right. You have more websites than Carter has liver pills, right? on that. Well, you get these threats of the week. Have any of them been serious? Has there been any serious threats on your life?
No. Well, back in the day, like I said, there was a $2 million hit on me.
Right. But most of those guys are dead now, right? There's nobody from the Lucchese crime family, which you were part of, around. Hold grudges against you.
Now, all the people that I was involved with are all gone. Every one of them is dead.
Yeah. Hey, Ronnie, I got a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Willie.
Henry, you mentioned earlier that if you didn't get into the witness protection program, they would have whacked you.
Absolutely.
Killed you. Now, how would they have done that? Can you go back and say and describe how they might have done that?
Oh, I mean, Jimmy, Jimmy was a charmer. I mean, they tried to grab my wife. That one scene in the movie, where Jimmy was telling her, go get some dresses. They already had a plan.
She goes into the back alley, right?
She wanted to go pick up some dresses.
Right.
And, I was supposed to meet Jimmy that day. if I didn't show up, I knew that, they would have threw a bomb in my house. I mean, these guys had no... I mean, they were homicidal maniacs, every freaking one of them.
Yeah, so they would have bombed the house? They would have shot you like the typical three in the back of the head?
Oh, forget about it. I've seen them do it. It's a terrible, terrible way to live.
Right. Well, you've told somebody, and you're very candid about it, very honest. You said that, your life, you live in fear all the time, right? You're making the wrong move or pissing off somebody.
I don't live in fear today. No.
No. I mean, back in those days.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Of course. I knew that I there was a price on my head. I mean, I'm not a moron. I'm stupid, but I'm not a
like I said, I love your website. You had a section in there, How to Be a Mobster, and one of the sections I love was, it said, leave an impression, and then you, to quote the text that you said, sometimes you need to wise them up a bit, and you have several ways, head cheese, and you suggest shave their head and massage it with a cheese grater. Did they really do that? I mean, did they really do that? Is that something out of your imagination, or is that something that the mafia would do to, you know, to wise you up, or leave an impression?
Now, I mean, Tommy used to torture guys. Tommy had like 32 whacks on him. The guy Joe Pesci played.
Right.
Portrayed.
Right. Yeah.
Tommy used to come back. He had 32 notches. He had two pistols. We used to go two gun Tommy. He's the notches pistols. Honest to God, he had 32 notches on his pistols. And he used to torture people. I mean, literally torture them. Pull their fingernails out and come back and brag about it.
So he was as crazy as the character played by Pesci in the movie, right?
Calmed him down tremendously. They calmed him down tremendously. The movie was rated X. There's 32 minutes. That's Scorsese fought tooth and nail to keep in there because it was rated, you know, triple X.
Right. Well, that's the interesting part because I read that there was a lot of good stuff that Scorsese thought would be X-rated because of the squaring and the gore. And I read where the movie, it had the second number of curse words after Pulp Fiction, something like 264. So he cut out a lot of interesting stuff.
Mostly all violent stuff.
Well, what kind of stuff, do you remember what kind of stuff he cut out from the movie? Because the movie itself, I mean, it stands alone as one of the best crime pictures.
Actually, I've seen it once. I've seen the director's cut once. You know, with that, and then they wouldn't give me a copy. You know, they didn't want that to get out, you know.
Right. Well, the movie itself, you know, set a standard for mafia films, but didn't win an Oscar. Was that kind of disappointing to you?
Not really. No, we won three Golden Globes. We won one Academy Award, but we was up against Dances with Wolves. Now that's a violent movie, Dances with Wolves.
Right.
You know, Scorsese is an East Coast guy, and he was against up against Kevin Costner. There was just no way that.
And I don't think Scorsese played the Hollywood game, right? He didn't snooze up with the powers that be. He's a pretty independent guy.
Yeah,
on that story. The movie is critically acclaimed. Is there anything in there that you didn't like about the movie that you thought?
Absolutely not. You know, I know something. I used to go see the Dailies over at Warner Brothers.
Right.
I was in California at the time. I couldn't go back for, you know, they filmed the location in New York.
Wow.
And it didn't make no sense to me. I didn't know nothing about the industry back then, you know.
Right.
It was a little green to me.
Yeah,
you know,
Henry,
and
were you on the set of the movie? Sorry. Were you on the set when the production was being produced?
Yeah, were you a consultant to the movie? Were you on the set and they asked you about this scene or that scene?
I was on the phone every day, four or five times, with De Niro, with Pesci, but Scorsese had never directed Liotta, and he didn't want me to influence him in any way, and I couldn't even talk to him, you know, until after the, you know, until a rap party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a rap party out here, and I'm, you know, first time I ever met him.
Right.
We got Jerry's
Were you happy with Ray Liotta's performance?
Yeah,
did he capture that what you thought was your essence as a personality?
Unbelievable! He should have been nominated for an Academy Award.
You're right. He was dominated every scene,
yeah.
And he was his performance, and that was really great. Willie, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and talk with Henry Hill, and we'll learn a little bit about his some of the things he's got going on today. Go ahead.
You bet, Ronnie. What a fascinating guest we have tonight. You're listening to Crime Beat on the Artists First World Radio Network with Ron Chepsik and Will Rib. Now back to Ron and the legendary Mr. Henry Hill.
Right. We've got Henry Hill with us, who needs no introduction. He's the subject of a great book by Nicholas Bellagio, Wise Guy, and a movie, Goodfella, the classic movie, Martin Scorsese's masterpiece. And you can go, we'll give you some websites. And Henry, you could help us with this. I have one here, www.goodfellowhenry.com. To find more about Henry and his products. Where else can you send him, Henry?
Good morning, Henry at charter.net. That's my main one these days. But just Google me, and, four or five different websites come up.
Right. And, of course, they can always email you, right? You're very open about that.
Ooh, I'll answer it. Marbot on eBay.
Right.
You know, all my paintings are up there.
Right, we're going to talk about that. You also got a new venture called Original Gangster.
Yeah.
And that is at www, I think, originalgangstershop.com, right?
Something like that. I don't even
know. Right. What's involved with that?
Different memorabilia, a fashion line. Go with me, and you can see, anybody that's interested in.
Right. You're all over the place, so it should be not very difficult for people to learn more about you or some of the things you got going on for you on that. And getting back to our discussion here, you're a West Coast guy now, right, Henry?
Correct. I live in Topanga.
Right, near Malamo. How is that? You know, going all the way from Brooklyn. You know, if you get that movie, it seems like, it's a different type of environment. To California.
The only things I got to worry about is coyotes and raccoons.
So you live out in the wilds a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, I live 15 minutes from the ocean, 15 minutes from the city. You know, from L.A. and Malibu is my neighbor.
Right.
You know, but I live in the mountains. It's beautiful up here. I love it.
Right. Well, what's a typical day like for you? Here you are.
I paint. I cook. You know, I have a tomato sauce company also.
A tomato sauce company?
Yeah. We make tomato sauce and bottle it and ship it. It's going to be available in all the PXs. The Omni PXs.
What makes your tomato sauce special? What's so special about your tomato sauce?
Patience, a lot of love. You know, it's, you can find it at www.goodfellasfoods.com.
Goodfellasfoods.com.
Yep.
On that then. I know I got a copy of Henry Hill's The Wise Guy cookbook in front of me. Here, and you got some really wild recipes. You got Crap Game Heroes and Henry's Kickback Antipasti Hero and Designer Pizza.
I'm working on another cookbook also.
Right. Well, where does an ex-mobster get this interest in cooking?
Obviously,
you know your stuff, because I looked at the recipes, and they're really amazing.
I mean, ever since I was a kid, the boys had a pizza joint right around the corner from the cab stand, the limo service.
Right.
So, I worked there as a kid. But for my mother, these are all my mom's recipes.
Oh, they're all your mom's recipes. She must be, must have been a hell of a cook.
Oh, yeah, she was.
Yeah, of course, when we saw the movie, they're always eating in the movie, right?
Oh, correct, yeah.
on that bit. And I understand that you learned to cook. Also, you took cooking classes in prison.
Well, yeah, no, in the Army, actually.
In the Army, that's right.
I had two MOSs. I was a sharpshooter and a cook.
A sharpshooter and a cook.
Yeah,
you either fed them or shot them, right?
Yeah, I got a question. I got another.
Yeah, go ahead, Willie.
Yeah, Henry, you joined the Army in 1960. You were 17 years old.
59, I joined the Army.
Eh?
1959, I joined the 82nd Airborne.
Did you get drafted or you joined on your own?
82nd Airborne.
Okay, wow. And of
course, I tried to get away from that life even back then.
Yeah,
I seen where it was taking me.
Yeah.
I was at least smart enough to try to get out of it then.
Yeah, well, and you know what? In your bio, while you were in the Army, you were selling extra food for money. I mean, you started your career in the
I gave more of it away to the poor people down in, North Carolina, South Carolina. I gave 90% of it away,
Right. Well,
otherwise it would have went into the, I was a cook, and, we would have had throw it away, and the pigs would have ate it. So I'd rather give it to the poor people in this little town that I had a girlfriend in.
Right. Well, one of the best parts of that movie deals with the cooking in the prison, where the mafia are sitting there. You're sitting there, and Ray Liotta walks in, and Paulie's there, and everybody. Was that the way it really happened? I mean, did you set it up like that, where you're different from the rest of the prisoners?
Absolutely. We lived in honor dorms, and we had it going on back in those days. You could get away with it back in those days.
Right.
Frank Catrone is the guy up at Frank Catron is the guy from Canada that was there. He was one of our crew. You know, but not our crew, but he was a boss in Canada.
Right. But what about prison? I mean, you came out and you essentially went back to what you did. Do they do any kind of job at reforming, prisoners and turning them back into society as productive citizens? Or
They tried. I mean, I got my college degree in prison and was able to take care of my family, you know, because I got $630 a month, you know, under the GI Bill for going to school. And it was pretty nice, you know. I mean, I can't say that. I mean, it helped me more or less in life.
Right. Well, so, yeah, right. You took something away that helped you.
Exactly.
Right. On that sort of thing. On that. But you know, you're incredibly busy. You were born in 43, so I guess you're about 67, 68 years old now. And it seems like you're like a guy starting out in. In life, you got those paintings too, which are really interesting. I know they sell on eBay. Yeah. And how did you develop this interest? And what type of paintings do you
like? Actually, honest to God, they're mostly scenes from the movie, you know. I learned how to paint in prison. I took art classes, but I mean, it's just, you know, it's just mob art, I call it. You know, it's it's all funny stuff, and actually, I could do some real good landscaping stuff.
Right.
You know, I like to work with watercolors.
Right. Well, do you sell these paintings? I mean, do people actually buy them? Are you professional artists, or are you just doing it for a hobby?
No, I sell them. I sell them on mob art on eBay.
Right. How much are you selling the paintings for?
Cheap, $30, $35,
$40. Oh, that's great, and it adds up, right?
Yeah, you know, I sell, I can knock out, you know, 6-8 a day. You know, I take special orders. You know, a lot of people want special ones. And, I do special ones. And I mean, I can take my time, but I can knock out, you know what, to me it's therapy.
Right.
Cooking and art are therapy for me.
Right.
It keeps me out of trouble. My mind just goes off into that world.
Right.
You know what I'm doing.
Right. On that, I think we had some questions from some people that wrote in some questions for Henry Hill, right?
Yeah.
Willie, do you got one? No, I got one.
Yeah.
A little later. Go ahead, please.
Well, this one is from a friend of mine that is living in Toronto, Canada. He's asking Henry, what's your favorite movie aside from Goodfellas in the gangster genre?
Oh, Godfather 1.
Mine too. That was a great movie.
No, that was a great movie. Coppola. I mean, you know. It was just a fabulous movie.
Right.
That's for sure.
Well, how about some of these cable things like The Wire, Sopranos?
Great movie. Sopranos are great. I mean, it's a little Hollywoodish, but, they try to get a positive message, of course, on a lot of those movies.
Right.
They do get a lot, a positive message.
Right.
Okay. And that's what I care about.
Right. Well, what's interesting is I understand that My Blue Heaven was based on your life. Is that right?
Well, yeah, Nora Ephron and Nick.
Right.
How
many people might know that? There's actually two movies based about your life. How did that come about? And Nora Ephron is A-list.
Yeah, yeah. She's
Hollywood. She's great. I like her movies.
Yeah, Sleepless in Seattle and all those other great movies she's done.
How did that come about? And what's it about?
When I was writing the book Wise Guy with Nick, she used to get me on the phone and I'd have a couple of glasses of wine, you know, and she just coached a lot of stuff out of me, you know. I didn't even know what she was. I didn't know. What she was even doing until the movie came out.
Huh.
And then my people wanted me to sue her. I wouldn't sue her. That's Nick's wife.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, she's married to Nicholas Pelagi.
Yeah, Nick Lepore. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So you got another. There was another movie based on you. How do you like My Blue Heaven compared to Goodfellas?
Oh, I mean, it's completely. You know, it's a joke. But it wasn't based on my life like Goodfellas was.
Right.
But they took a whole lot of stuff from my life, you know, and then portrayed it in the movie.
Right, on that.
Ronnie, I've got an email from a fellow in Vancouver, Canada.
Okay.
I'm just reading it now. Tony Thoris, his name is. He's asking, what was the lowest part of your life, and did you ever think that you wanted to get out of this life of yours?
You mean, did I ever contemplate suicide? No.
Right.
No, absolutely not. I've had a lot of low points and high points in my life. But you know what? So is everybody else. I mean, you know, no one, you know, guarantees you that life's a bowl of cherries. You know, life is life. You know, you live on life, and, you know, you live life on life's terms. You know, you got, I mean, who the heck has a, you know, who has it so wonderful that, you know, every day is paradise.
Right, and if, I think, too, Henry, if you keep busy, too, right? If you got,
exactly.
If you're looking ahead rather than behind, you know, you don't get depressed, and you can live your life, even though you had a lot of problems in the past.
Of course, you know, right. life is wonderful.
Right. That. Well, I got another question. My wife will kill me if I don't mention it. We're watching the movie today, and we got to the section on the Lufthansa heist, one of the biggest heists in history. It was over. The movie said something like $5 million.
$8 million in cash.
Right, $5 million. And she said to me, and I never even thought about what happened to the money. You know, in that movie, and I didn't have the answer, so I said, well, let me ask Henry Hill when I get him on. What happened to the money?
They never recovered a nickel. The wise guys took most of it, the bosses.
Wow. You did, and they couldn't trace that money or nothing like that?
Oh, on log bills.
Oh, wow. On that. So you never saw a cent, and all those people died.
I mean, I've seen some chump change from it. I've seen, you know, 100,000, 200,000.
Right.
I don't even not know how much.
Right, on that. Let's take a break, Willie, and we'll go into the last section. We got about 10 minutes, and we'll go into the last section.
Wow, fascinating, very fascinating interview tonight, fellas. You're listening to Crime Beat on the Artist First World Radio Network with Ron Shepsick and Will Rib. Now back to Ron and the legendary Mr. Henry Hill.
Right, we're back with Henry Hill. Of course, he's no introduction. He's subject of a great movie, Goodfellas, and a great book, Nicholas Pelagi's Wise Guy. On that. Henry, we mentioned a lot of websites. I think our listeners would be interested to know that you got a book coming out on the Lufthansa heist.
Correct.
Right? To talk a little bit about that. What's that involved in? Why should readers buy it after, you know, if they got a copy of Wise Guy and read that?
Well, because, I mean, it just tells the whole exact true story of the Lufthansa heist. You know, it's still in the Guinness Book of Records as the largest cash, cash.
Right.
Cash robbery in the United States history.
Right. So you're going to expand on
exactly
right and go into more. And there's no book on that, right? And it's would have been the biggest robberies in history.
It was
right on that. Well, one of the interesting things doing research is that you're raised with John Gotti. Is that true?
Oh yeah, no. He was a Gambino, and a couple of miles away was their headquarters from my headquarters. And I was on Park, Queens.
Wow.
Oh, and sure, I knew John Gotti ever since I was 15 years old.
Right. Well, what kind of guy was he?
A fucking bully.
He was a bully.
Fine. You know.
Did you think he would become the Gambino crime boss?
Absolutely not. You know, I mean, I figured he'd have got whacked way before that. He brought more heat to the mob than Al Capone did. You know what I mean? Back in the day,
right? So he was a disaster for the mafia, right? He brought so much publicity to them. You know, they tried, instead of keeping a low profile, he
exactly.
said, "Come and get me,
yeah.
Come and get me." And so, did you think he had a lot to do with the downfall of the mafia? Because let's face it, the mafia is in really tough shape today.
Oh come on, stop! That's another fallacy.
You think so?
Absolutely. They're just under the radar a whole lot more than they used to be.
Well, you know, you have godfathers becoming informants. There seems to be a big bust of a mafia group. Every 5 or 6 months.
Yeah.
You want to know something? As long as there's humans, as long as there's money out there, as long as there's voting blocks. Come on, stop. I mean, that's J. Edgar Hoover wouldn't believe. To 1957,
right.
to the Appalachian meeting, that there was a mafia.
Mm-hmm.
Come on,
Hey, Henry, you know, the Mafia is associated with the Italian group. Are they getting pushed out by the Chinese groups or the
Dominicans, Colombians?
All the rest of the gangsters out there trying to push these guys out of the East Coast?
They're never going to push them out. I mean, they're so entrenched in, you know, in what they got going on with gambling and drugs and unions. No, I mean, you know, there's enough out there for all those families. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you see, you think it's a fiction that that the mafia is on its last legs and that they're not the same old mafia. I mean, you know, the younger generation don't have that. You know, they don't seem to have what the old timers had. You know, in the mafia. They don't seem to have it. Whether it's talking about the brains. Or the balls. I mean, you know, it's really. I find it hard to believe that that the mafia is still at the same level.
Well, you know, they're just a little more under the radar. You know, they're a little more smarter.
Right. Right on.
You know, come on.
Right.
You know, as long as there's an illegal dollar to be made, you're going to find the entire mafia right in the midst of it.
Right. What about, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but two of your children wrote a great book, too, which I've read, you know, On the Run, A Mafia Childhood.
You know, it's my daughter.
Yeah, right. Are you still in touch with your family?
Absolutely. I see them as much as possible. Good. I have three wonderful, beautiful children. I got five wonderful grandchildren. And I see them quite often these days.
Right. Well, what are they doing? Are they like professionals?
They are, you know, they all are, and they're just wonderful kids. And my grandkids are wonderful grandkids. And
right.
What
about your ex-wife? Do you see her? She's played such a prominent. She did such a prominent part in the movie, and I think you were divorced in '88.
Yeah, she's fine. I see her often too.
Right.
And my son from my third marriage lives with my first wife. Believe it or not.
Well, what is she doing? What is she doing? Is she remarried or?
Oh, she never got remarried. She's doing fine.
Right. Well,
she's doing fine.
Do you think that the reason that you had problems, you know, after you went into federal witness protection program, do you think it was because of the program?
No, it was because of myself.
Oh, you blame yourself?
Absolutely.
Right.
I don't believe me. I had a lot of problems, and I didn't know how to deal with them, and as you get older, you get smarter, wiser, you know.
Right. I don't know, but I think I could say that for you and me, well, Henry, but I don't know about Willie.
Be your radio partner.
well, Willie and I go back to when we were in diapers, so we could joke.
We had a lot of crime element in our part of town of the East End,
right,
Henry. There was a lot of stuff happening there, so this all fits in like a glove.
Right. Well, you know, you said you had those problems. Those problems stem from your past life, like maybe guilt or regret or
a lot of regrets. But you want to know something? Well, I can't change the past. You know what I mean? I can live in it now. You know, and I can't predict the future. All I can do is live a great, you know, be a grain of sand better today than I was yesterday.
Right.
That's all I can do.
Right.
I mean, and if I can help somebody, some young person that wants to get out of the mob, there's a way out of the mob for those kids.
Right.
You know, if they really want it, you know, they
can. Right. Well, I understand that we're talking about Ray Liotta and, you know, what a great job he did. But I understand he helped encourage you to get into a drug rehabilitation program, which helped you, right?
Yeah, it pays for it and everything.
Right. Are you still friends with Ray and the cat?
I see him occasionally, sure. I see him occasionally. He's doing great. He's a wonderful man. You know, he's a very, very wonderful guy. And,
right.
You know, there's a lot of people in my life today that... I just can't imagine. You know, like I said, I'm blessed.
Right.
I am so blessed. It's unbelievable.
I got another
question. Go ahead, Willie.
Getting back to when you were in prison, Henry, you know, you guys were smuggling in a lot of dope, a lot of drugs. How did you guys get past the guards with that stuff?
They got paid off. back in those days, it was so easy to, you know, money talked and bullshit walked. Let me tell you something. Jimmy had an old saying, you know, everybody has a price, and that's the truth.
Yes, that is the truth, isn't it? Especially,
you know,
especially
you can reach anybody.
In prisons, those poor paid guards, right?
Exactly. Guys are doing 20 to life themselves, you know what I mean?
Right. On that then. Well, you know, at one time you couldn't read or write. You learned how to do that. You've written books. And I understand that you're involved with scripts. Is that true? You're actually writing scripts with somebody?
Oh, yeah. Scripts? With Peter Doyle. We just finished the Boston College script, you know, about the Boston College point-shaving scam that we had going on.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we had Tim Donaghy on. You know, and the famous basketball. And, of course, you were associated with that scandal at 78, I believe, right?
78, 79.
Right, on that then. Well, do you think the NBA is corrupt even after Donaghy was exposed? Do you think that's still going on?
Listen, anywhere, any place where there's that kind of money and gambling involved, human beings, there's a place for corruption.
Right.
And, you know, what can I say? I mean, why would a guy, you know, like Donnie, you know, blow his career, you know, for what? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, listen, that guy controlled the game. So, come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Of course, the biggest crooks are on Wall Street, right?
Well,
and they're doing it legally.
Exactly.
You know, on that. Well, you're writing scripts. What about a sequel to Goodfellas? There seems to be enough there for a sequel, you know, Henry Hill and his life after he entered the witness protection program, because it has a lot of highs and it has a lot of lows.
Yeah, well, you know what? Right now we have a television series with Nick Pelleggi, you know, who's got that going on, and we'll see. You know what? And when it comes to me, you know, when it's presented to me, then I'm interested. You know, to get the right producers, and you know, Scorsese will never do a sequel, so he's out of the picture apparently.
Well, he doesn't do sequels. That's what I understand. He doesn't do. That's his own personal philosophy towards filmmaking. You know, he won't do a sequel, no matter how tempting it could be.
Yeah, he didn't do Raging Bull, a sequel to that. It was the best picture, you know, of the 80s.
Yeah, I got another quick one for.
Go ahead, Willie. We got a minute, and we'll finish up. I'll have a follow up question after you.
You bet. Henry Hill. That sounds like a real nondescript name. I mean, a lot of gangsters had nicknames. Did you ever get a moniker that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, they used to call me School of Bastard because I wouldn't listen to nobody. He used to go in. It's School of Bastard is a macaroni strainer in Italian.
That's a new one on us. Well, it didn't. I don't think it showed up in the movie, did it?
No, it didn't.
That's interesting because it should have gave you. Well, you could never be made, of course, because you weren't Italian, right? You were Irish on that. So, did that make you feel like an outsider?
Absolutely not. It was a blessing in a way. It was.
Right. We got one last question here, and this has been a great interview. What about the future, Henry? You're going strong. You've got so many things and so many fires going. How do you look at the future?
You know, like I said, I just try to be a grain of sand better today than I was yesterday. And if I could, you know, help the, you know, the young people in life, that's all I want to do.
Right.
You know, I do a lot of, I do a lot of charity stuff, and that's all.
Right.
You know,
you're a fascinating guy and an inspiration, really. And we really appreciate you being on the show. We'd like to have you back again. Hopefully next year we could talk one of your books or a little bit more about that, because you've been fascinating guests, and thank you so much for being on the show. Willie, do you want to say anything before we leave?
Yeah, Henry, thanks a lot. Anytime you're up in Canada, come up and see us. We'll take you fishing, and we'll get that big one that might have got away from you years ago.
Right.
That's great.
And I hear Neil Young hangs out near you, so you might see me on your doorstep someday looking for a room.
thanks for having me, guys.
But anyways, thank you so much for being on the show.
Okay, ciao for now.
Okay, then. Thank you, then, Henry. Bye-bye. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, Ronnie. Wow, that was great. That was a great great interview with Henry Hill. He told us a lot.
Surprising interview, right?
It was.
Yeah,
you know,
surprising.
Like,
I mean, you know, he had so much to say, and he had so much going,
yeah.
And he's so positive, yet, you know, he's had so many problems, and that's that was, you know, what I, you know, took away from it. And he sort of, like, I was, you know, really serious. I mean, he was inspiration.
Well, he was like that grandfatherly comment you made when you talked to him yesterday. You hit it right on the head, buddy.
Yeah, on that. What about you, Willie? What do you think? What did you take away?
Well, I think he was great, you know, and I hope we get him on again.
Right.
What did you learn from our program tonight, Ronnie?
Exactly that.
The
Henry Hill, you know, is a really complex character, dynamic. And, you know, he's really turned his life around. He's got, you know, he's had issues before, but he's dealt with them, and he's a survivor. He's, you know, going strong at 67. And it doesn't look
68.
Like... 68. Well, yeah, 68 this year sometime. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't look like he's going to slow up. So I look up to the guys like that. You know,
yeah,
I'm ambitious and all that, and so I take that away. How about you, Willie?
Well, you know, like you said, he's an inspiration, and I'm really glad he came on the show and told us about all his work with the young kids. Yeah. Anyway, I learned that Henry Hill is one of that lucky guy, man. You know, he's on this side of the turf. Apparently, he outlived all those mobsters that were out.
Amazing, isn't it?
You know, they wanted their pound of flesh. He's one hell of a lucky guy. And let me tell you, he's turned his life around and showing these young people that gangster life is not the way to go.
Right.
Now, Ronnie, at this time, we're going to bring you our Crime Beat Gangster Nickname of the Month segment. Remember this guy, George Machine Gun Kelly? Well, George Machine Gun Kelly, the notorious racketeer who gave FBI agents the nickname G-Man, was given his gangster nickname by his wife, Catherine, who forced him to practice with the machine gun. She gave it to him as a birthday present. She became his public relations force and built up his street credibility with criminals. In fact, he was not accused or convicted of murder and never used his machine gun with the intent to kill. You know, during his time in Alcatraz, he got the nickname Popgun Kelly for the fact that he was a model prisoner and was nowhere near the tough, brutal gangster his wife made him out to be. Hey, Ronnie, any nicknames your wife is calling you nowadays?
Nothing that I can repeat on the air. I'll just say Pink Anatomy.
Okay.
Yeah, but not talking about Catherine Kelly. She was a PR master, and she made machine gun into a image that he didn't deserve.
Yeah. Well, we'll come out with another one in our next segment in 4 weeks.
Okay.
Now, just a reminder to all our listeners out there, our next program is scheduled for October the 20th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our featured guest will be Mr. Lou Diaz in a command performance, the Toughest Nails former Drug Enforcement Agency undercover operative and author of the blockbuster best-selling book titled Dancing with the Devil. It's going to be a great show, so make sure you mark it on your calendar or put it on your BlackBerry, and you won't be disappointed. You can't miss this one. Well, we hope you enjoyed Crime Beat this evening on the Artist First Worldwide Radio Network with Ron Chepsik and yours truly, Will Harib. For all of you out there, you can listen to all our past Crime Beat programs anytime by going to the archive on the Artist First World Radio Network. We'd like to thank all of you out there for listening to our broadcast this evening. And in the meantime, we welcome your emails and thoughts about our program. You can email us at crimebeat123@yahoo.com. And please spread the word about our program. If you want to support the broadcast, please make a contribution to Crime Beat via the Artist First World Radio Network. The address is on the top page of the website for your quick reference. And until next week, and on behalf of Ron Chepsik and myself, Will Harib, we hope you tune in to Crime Beat next Thursday, same time, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you want to have a front row seat to the fascinating world of crime. Have a pleasant evening, everybody. Good night, Ronnie.
Good. Sleep tight, Willie.